This is CICK News. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Dan Messick. Each week, we provide an update about events and issues developing right across Northwest BC. CICK Smithers Community Radio is on the dial at 93.9 FM, or you can listen online at smithersradio.com or subscribe to our podcast. CICK News broadcasts from unceded Ginamden Territory, home of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. Today on CICK News, last week we heard from Nancy Cody, co-chair of What Matters in Our Valley, a group of locals with major concerns about a possible open-pit coal mine operating in the Bulkley Valley. Today we have a chance to speak with Mark Gray, chairman and managing director for Telkwa Coal, a proposed open-pit metallurgical coal mine just 7 kilometers outside of Telkwa. Also known as the Tennis Project, Telkwa Coal is a joint venture partnership with 90% of the project owned by Allegiance Coal, an Australian coal mining company, and 10% owned by Itochu Corporation of Japan. More than 800,000 metric tons of coal is proposed to be blasted and mined every year before being loaded onto trains and shipped out through the Ridley Island Terminal in Prince Rupert for steel mills in Asia. Gray and his team have been engaging with communities and the Wet'suwet'en since 2016, and earlier this year applied to the provincial government for an environmental assessment permit. The project has been working its way through the process over the last number of months and most recently completed the first public comment period. And although many comments submitted to the BCEAO were in opposition to the coal mine, Chairman Mark Gray believes the project can still move forward. Stay with us.
This is Mark Gray. I'm the chairman of Allegiance Coal, which is the parent company of Telkwa Coal. And I live here in Smithers and Bulkley Valley.
Great, Mark. Thanks so much for being with us today. Obviously, this project has been going through the EA, the BCEA, Environmental Assessment, for some time now. We recently, in July, ended a public comment period due to that environmental assessment, and it's continuing to work its way through that process. I guess at the moment, maybe you can tell us a little bit brief about the project and also where we're at in terms of the environmental assessment.
Let me start with the EA process first. On 22nd of February this year, we lodged a formal application for an environmental assessment certificate, and that activated the formal EA review process, which is a 180-day review process by the BCEA office, following which the ministers of mining and environment make a decision about granting or not an environmental assessment certificate. Before we lodged the application, we spent, I would say, four to five years of what you would describe as a pre-application undertaking, some engagement with the Environmental Assessment Office, several open houses with the local community. As we progress through the pre-application phase, which is quite a comprehensive phase, typically the Environmental Assessment Office don't let you go into the formal EA review until they think you are review ready. As far as the application itself is concerned, quite a bit of effort preceded that document. The project itself is partly defined by what our shareholders aspire in terms of a producing coking coal mine, and also what a lot of the community provided to us by way of feedback in terms of its scale, its surface design, and other related impacts. So we will be seeking to produce around about 800,000 metric tons of saleable metallurgical coal each year. And our feasibility study says that we will be able to do that from the pit that we are seeking to be permitted for a period of around about 25 to 30 years. It's an open pit operation. It is by comparison to other operating mines, and not just coal mines, but all mines are extremely small in scale and relatively shallow as well. The coal is very shallow, and surfaces, or the subcrop is just below the surface for most of the resource. The coal will be railed. It will be loaded at a rail loadout, which will be located 7 kilometres south of the town of Tauqua, along Lawson Road. We've acquired a property there, and it will load directly onto CN Rail. We will do about, on average, slightly more than one train a week. I mean, that's how small it is. It's the incremental impact of that train onto the railway network is de minimis. And then, of course, it's a 375-kilometre rail haul to Ridley Coal Terminal at Rupert, from where it'll be loaded on vessels, and the target market for this coal is the steel mills in Japan and South Korea.
Okay. I guess, Mark, you know, maybe you can tell me a little bit about, you know, some of your experience in the mining world. I know that it looks like Allegiant has been involved in other projects around the world. Maybe you can tell me a little bit your experience and how you ended up here in Smithers and in the Bulkley Valley. How did you hear about this place, and how long have you been here?
So my shareholders believe in the long-term demand for coking coal, metallurgical coal, steelmaking coal, coal that goes into a blast furnace with iron ore to make steel. And that represents about 70% of global steel production, which is a 10 billion ton per annum industry. So my shareholders want exposure to that commodity because they believe in the long-term demand of that commodity. The majority of seaborne metallurgical coal is produced out of Australia, primarily central Queensland. The next largest producer is America, and following very close on America's heels is Canada, and that is fundamentally British Columbia. So those three jurisdictions are the largest producers and suppliers of coking coal onto the seaborne market. Because my shareholders wanted exposure to this commodity, that naturally led us to look at opportunities here in British Columbia and also the United States. So we have two operating mines in the United States, both of which produce coking coal, and we also have another development project there, and of course we have the Tauqua project as well.
You know, obviously we, as I mentioned earlier, we just saw this comment period part of the EA process that allowed the public to comment on some of the information that was provided by the company to the EAO office to take a look at this and obviously give some feedback as to what they believe is needed or not needed in the valley. And you know, looking at through some of the comments, over, you know, 500 of them, 535 of them, there were quite a lot of them that raised some concerns with the project. Obviously, you know, concerns around water, concerns around fish, air, noise as well, and dust from the coal mine itself. And then one that kind of stood out to me was Larry, I might get his name wrong here, Barzelli. He was the chair of the BC CAP, so the BC Committee of the Canadian Association of Physicians for the Environment, and pointing out that this is something that they don't believe is warranted, and that the steelmaking industry in general is trying to move away from this kind of metallurgical coal, the coking coal. I know even with the aluminum smelter in Kitimat is looking at integrating some technology that would virtually get rid of the emissions out of the process to create aluminum. So I guess the question is why do you feel that this is needed now? You also mentioned it's a pretty small mine, extremely small mine compared to some other mines, especially those coal mines in the Elk Valley. And so why do you think that this mine is needed now and here in Telkwa?
Quite a few points in what you raised there, but I'll deal with the last one, which was you were very specific about. Why develop another coking coal mine, and albeit a small one? I think dealing with the last point first, a small mine, that stems from, once again, what my shareholders are focused on. They're focused on low capital expenditure projects. Typically to build a normal-sized mine, be it a coal mine or a copper mine or a gold mine, it's a multi-billion-dollar investment. My shareholders don't want that. They want low capex projects. So scale is important to them. This project is relatively low capex, and not wanting to be, trite about it, but, a $100 million project is a relatively low capital project in the mining industry. But, that's the order of magnitude that we're looking at. Why another coking coal mine? A movement away from coking coal going into a blast furnace. It's an area which is certainly developing the replacement of a coking coal in a blast furnace with hydrogen. That is the technology most likely to displace, not replace, but displace coking coal going into a blast furnace. And then, of course, I guess you can categorize hydrogen in two ways. There is hydrogen, which is made from fossil fuels. And then there is hydrogen, which is made from renewable energy. In order to split the hydrogen from the oxygen, from separating the hydrogen from the oxygen in a water molecule requires an enormous amount of power. I mean, phenomenal. The same amount of power that Kitimat smelter, for example, requires. It's quite apart from the capital cost of doing that, generating enough electricity to undertake that exercise in a meaningful way is a massive undertaking, and to do so with renewable energy, with what is referred to as green hydrogen, is going to make, I think, relatively small impact. Overall, on a 10 billion ton industry, the cost of doing so and the availability of that amount of energy to undertake the chemical reaction that you want in order to achieve to develop the hydrogen is extraordinarily expensive and extraordinarily challenging. The people who are promoting it are typically is Europe. Europe is one area where this technology is being promoted and being advanced. But Europe represents about less than 5% of the production of steel. The biggest producers of steel is Central Asia, China, India, and South Korea and in Japan. And China and India in particular, you know, who are going through industrialization, you need to convince them to move towards this technology in order to make a meaningful change. So, you know, we have absolutely no doubt that certainly for the next 50 years that there is going to be an ongoing requirement for metallurgical coal in a blast furnace. Added to that is, you know, quite apart from the demand, on the supply side, what we've seen in the last 6 to 8 years is that the major mining companies are exiting coal altogether. And that's primarily because their shareholders don't want them to be in the commodity, whether it's thermal coal power generation or it's metallurgical coal for steel production. The major producers, companies like BHP, Rio Tinto, the two largest mineral houses in the world, are exiting coal. In fact, Rio has exited 100%, and BHP is divesting of some, not all of its assets, but divesting nonetheless. So the supply chain, which the industry has relied on for the last 30 years, has shrunk quite considerably, and the supply chain now relies on junior companies like ourselves to keep this commodity available for the industry.
Obviously, you mentioned it earlier that BC is no stranger to producing coal, coal mines, and shipping it overseas. I mentioned the Elk Valley, which has seen, you know, a number of large coal mines, a lot of it metallurgical, being shipped at about 25 million tons per year. And, you know, they're discovering over the last number of years more and more issues with, you know, contamination, selenium in the river. And there are many concerns. There are advisories not to drink the water, not to eat the fish. Some fish are showing up with deformities that in some cases have been linked to some of these issues with the mine runoff. I guess, you know, again, looking through some of the comments from the public and people who are located in the community in Telkwa and Smithers, very strong angling, very strong community around water, around the river, around fish and salmon and steelhead especially, which we've seen declines in over the years. And a lot of these comments are focusing in on that. You know, what are the possibilities of contamination into the river, even just the sense or the possibility and risk that may harm the quality of water or the fish. You know, what is the company willing to do to ensure that doesn't happen? And, you know, hearing that a lot of these companies are pulling out of the coal industry altogether, I know even down in Elk Valley, Teck is looking to sell off some of their operations in the Elk Valley. You know, what are the assurances from Allegiance, from Telco Coal, that there won't be any contamination into the river that will jeopardize the quality of water and the fish here that sustain and support these communities?
I think there's probably two comments in relation to that question. The first one about Elk Valley. Elk Valley, the mines in Elk Valley, the current five mines which are operating and its predecessor mines have been operating for more than 50 years. The mining practices in Elk Valley, you know, decades ago, generations ago, are very, very different to what they are now. A lot of the damage that you see in the catchment is predominantly a result of the waste rock management practices which took place before, you know, we had the level of environmental legislation that BC has today. most of the damage was done during that period. Certainly, even without perhaps those practices, there may have been a level of damage as well. I mean, it's given that the selenium levels in baseline rock and the baseline water are extraordinarily high in the Elk Valley. Indeed, in the Rocky Mountains generally. As far as TENAS is concerned, all we can do is go through the environmental assessment process and have faith in the BC environmental assessment process to assess the impact analysis, impact reports which we have undertaken in relation to water quality, fish habitat, wildlife habitat, air, noise, all the things you referred to. So it's a extremely challenging process. As I mentioned before, the pre-application phase is very, very significant. I think it's wildly held in our industry that Canada and in British Columbia as well has one of the most rigorous permitting regimes in the world. So all we can do is go through the process, submit the results of the work that we have done, all of which is in the EA application document itself, and leave it to the regulators to decide, and that's what we're doing.
I guess just a couple more things for you, Mark. Obviously, another major, I guess you could call them stakeholder in this, is the Wet'suwet'en Nation. I know that there have been some obviously ongoing discussions with the Wet'suwet'en. What can you tell me about that relationship and your engagement with them? Is that something that is a priority? And how are those interactions ongoing? And is this just part of the EA process, or is this something aside from that to obviously respect Indigenous right and title and reconciliation with projects like these?
That's an excellent question. First, let me say that as far as Telkwa Coal is concerned, and Allegiance Coal for that matter, we treat the Wet'suwet'en people equal to the provincial government. We view this relationship as two governments. We acknowledge and respect the claims, the title claims, and the sovereignty of the Wet'suwet'en people to the lands and natural resources within their territory, and we do so not only because of the Declaration of Rights for Indigenous Peoples, but also more fundamentally in that I am Indigenous myself. I am First Nations to my people in New Zealand, and I grew up with this. And I understand it better than anyone else. So I would have to say that our approach and our attitude to Indigenous rights, I would say amongst, what you would call a Western organisation is as focused, is as honest and sincere as any company you will find. The very first people that I engaged with when we secured the these coal tenements, it would have to be, 6 years ago now, very first people I engaged with was the Office of the Wet'suwet'en. And the result of that was we entered into a communication and engagement agreement, which just set some protocols about how we were going to work through this pre-application phase. The relationship has been ongoing ever since, obviously impacted quite seriously by COVID and our inability to meet in a real meaningful way, and that includes Bulkley Valley as a whole. But it has been ongoing for a considerable period of time. We've since entered into a what we call a project assessment agreement, where the office of the Wet'suwet'en, on behalf of the hereditary chiefs, will undertake an independent impact analysis, impact assessment on our project, a parallel process with the BC provincial government. Wet'suwet'en will undertake that process with their own independent experts. Not on all aspects of the EA application, just the aspects which are important to the Wet'suwet'en people. So that sort of, you know, is my attitude, my company's attitude, and we're extremely sincere about it.
Just the last thing for you, Mark. Obviously, you've mentioned, you know, a few things here, and obviously trying to focus on, you know, even the small size of the mine, despite having to go through an environmental assessment of it. But, you know, taking a look at, you know, these 535 comments, listening and speaking to people in the community about this, a lot of them which didn't really know it was even happening. But it seems like generally the sense from the comments submitted to the EAO office are that most people who live here, who have attached their name and their location either in the Bulkley Valley or somewhere here in the Northwest or in Telkwa or Smithers specific, seem to have major concerns and disapprove of this. And obviously there is a handful of people that approve of it and would like to see this for economic benefit and whatnot. But I'm curious to understand the threshold of approval from the community. If the Wet'suwet'en, as well as the community here in Telkwa and Smithers and the Bulkley Valley in general, disapprove of this, despite what the EAO and the provincial government do, would you walk away from this project knowing that the local communities don't want a coal mine in their valley?
I think, you made an assumption there. You said that most people in Bulkley Valley don't want this mine.
Well, according to the comments that were provided to the EAO, most of the comments, most of the comments seem to have major concerns or disapprove of this. Obviously, there are some people locally that agree and would like to see this move forward, but most of the submitted comments to the EAO, which is the degree that we could use to take a look at, you know, who is you know, supportive of this or in opposition, majority of those seem to be in opposition of the project.
I mean, you know, I've lived here for 5 years, we've been very visual in our, you know, since we've been here, and I have engaged very, very widely. We've had many open houses since we've been here, far more than we are required to under the environmental assessment process. And I get a different message from the community. The fact that people who submit, majority of which oppose, I don't think necessarily is an indicator of community sentiment. But that aside, I guess, you know, we have to see where we arrive at with the BC environmental assessment process. And at that point in time, my board, you know, will decide whether this is a project that we will proceed with or we will not. And intimate in that decision-making process, without any doubt, will be the Wet'suwet'en. And, you know, that's a conversation that will be had in the course of time.
Okay. Mark Gray, thank you so much for speaking with us today and giving us your time. We appreciate it so much. And we will keep our eyes on this developing situation with the EA process. And hopefully we'll speak again in the future.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. And just to reiterate, you know, we live here. I'm in the valley. If I'm not traveling in the US or going home to see my wife in New Zealand, I'm always available. We rent the office space above the village office of Tauqua. Our office is open every afternoon except Friday. I'm generally here all the time. As I said, if I'm not traveling or visiting my wife, we can be contacted through, through our phone here or email. Invite people to our Tauqua Coal website. If you Google it, you will find a community website where we have contact details, both phone numbers and emails.
All right, Mark, we'll leave it there for now. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer Pam Hassan and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.